Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
I like that open for a Saturday afternoon. That is awesome. This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Brad Porter, formerly of Metro Sports. Now getting to hang out and have some fun here at WHB. Joshua Briscoe is running the board, and hopefully he'll jump in here to talk about some of the things today. First of all, a couple of bits of breaking news here, and I'll get this out of the way real quick because I've got a guest waiting here. Missouri football coach Barry Odom just announced given a 2-year contract extension. So the massive run that Mizzou went on at the end of the season and getting bowl eligible and having Drew Locke being the top quarterback in the SEC, Barry Odom, 2-year contract extension at the University of Missouri. And University of Texas has hired TCU AD Chris Del Conte. That is just kind of breaking right now. And we are happy to be joined by Brian Haney, the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, who's got a busy schedule today. I appreciate your time. But Texas hires an AD. Missouri's extending a football coach. It's all happening, Brian. It's all happening.
Fort Worth, obviously. You look at the success that TCU has enjoyed in the big three sports of football, men's basketball, where they just won the NIT last year and I think have a top 5 or 6 in the Big 12 conference perennially type program now, so long as Jamie Dixon is at the reins, a Del Conte hire, by the way. And then baseball, where they seemingly are in the College World Series every other year. That's a big-time get for UT, and I'm sure folks down there in the capital city of Austin are absolutely raising a glass over that news.
Yeah, and I have no problem with guys jumping around, but it kind of popped into my head. If this were a basketball or a football player wanting to transfer from TCU to Texas, they would say absolutely not. But ADs work on a different level.
They do, indeed.
Hey, I appreciate it. I know your schedule is busy today, and I know you got a lot of events, so if you need to jump off, just let me know. But let's get right to it. Kansas basketball, we've talked about the Washington loss over and over again for the past 3 days. So let's move on to Arizona State. Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock at Allen Fieldhouse. You can hear it here live on Sports Radio 810 WHB. First of all, has the flooding at Allen Fieldhouse been cleaned up? That happened.
I was just over there this morning, and nothing that affected the floor. Brandon Schneider and his women's basketball team got a practice in mid-morning. Coach Self's team got a practice in early afternoon. All is well there, and so it should not affect anything for tomorrow's game with Arizona State. But, yeah, I saw those same tweets and videos that you did late last night, and you've got the Holy Cathedral of college basketball right here in the city. We worry about anything that might affect our precious venue, but everything seems to be okay. And kudos to the managers and everybody with facilities that helped to get that sucker hit in the butt.
Yeah, the staff looked like they were working extremely hard to get that water out of there. So nice job. So let's get to the game here. Number 16, Arizona State. Kansas number 2 for now. They may slip after the loss to Washington, but watching a little bit of that game, Arizona State last night against St. John's, Arizona State a winner, 82-70. They're still perfect at 8-0. You look at some of their players like Raul White with 22 points. They got 18 from Shannon Evans II, 15 from Cody Justice. Maybe not as sharp from three-point land as they have been, but 9 of 23. This is a really solid basketball team that I haven't seen much of, but they were pretty impressive.
Yeah, Trey Holder had a bad game last night, but he's been their best scorer at 23 a game coming into last night. It still averages 20 a contest. He's terrific. I just spoke with Bill Self about them about an hour ago, and he was telling me about how the thing that jumps off the film is just how fast they are. The fact that they've got a trio of guards that are so good with the ball in their hands and can create for themselves or others off the bounce. And he used a term that I thought was interesting. He said that they're so fast, and they're even more clever with the ball than Frank Mason. And as soon as he said that,
wow,
it came off his tongue. He said, I'm not saying they're better than Frank Mason. Frank was the best player in America last year. But the way they share it, the way they create for each other at a really rapid pace, he said, is pretty dang impressive and maybe more clever with the ball than even what Kansas had a year ago with the Naismith and Wooden Award winner. So that's interesting. And you know, a lot of these guys are junior, senior types that have been in the program for a while. And, you know, a couple of seasons for Bobby Hurley to start off where he was two or three games under 500 and wasn't quite piecing it together just yet. But, man, have the pieces ever fallen into place to start this year at 8-0 and put it on Xavier pretty good. Barely slipped by K-State. But to be 8-0, ranked 16th in the country, they will most certainly have KU's attention. And for an offense that averages 90 points a game, and Kansas, who entered the week averaging 92 a game prior to the 65-point showing they had versus Washington, I think this could be a track meet. And Coach wants his guys to get up and down the floor. And usually when teams try to run with Kansas, it's not a good thing for the opposition. This is one team that might be able to keep pace. But in that building, if KU's hitting, and if they have more energy points, I think Kansas can win this game. What do I mean by that? Well, this is something we'll talk about in the pregame with Coach Self tomorrow, but it's things they chart on film, like deflections, tips and steals, blocks, and hustle plays where you get the 50-50 balls, offensive rebounds, crashing the glass, things like that. And there's all kinds of ways they chart it, but usually it's not uncommon to see a team go above 100 in energy points on the little hustle plays. And he said his club versus Washington only had 47 of those, 13 of which from Marcus Garrett alone. And so he wants to see the collective energy of his team go through the roof compared to what he saw on Wednesday. And we can sit here and cuss and discuss about, you know, how the zone that they threw at them kind of threw Kansas curveball that they couldn't quite hit. We could talk about how defensively they broke down and gave up a 54% shooting second half and 48% for the game. But more than anything, he just wants to see the overall energy level go up. And I think in that house, where the only thing that can keep that house down is running water, apparently, with the energy they'll feed off of in that crowd, I think that we'll see Kansas return to that type of level that Coach Self has come to expect.
We're talking with Brian Haney, the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Arizona State in Lawrence to take on the Jayhawks Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, pregame show before that. Brian, I'll have lots of great interviews and stuff. So you mentioned that the speed and the cleverness that the Arizona State guards have, and they have three pretty good ones, and seeing the zone that Washington and Syracuse threw out before, do you see this as a completely different matchup than that, that this could be an absolute track meet between two highly athletic teams?
I do, and I think Kansas will be just fine with that. You know, you want a schedule that gives you a varying blend of styles, you know, over the course of your first month and a half, these first 6 weeks, to get you set for Big 12 conference play where you see some good man teams, you see zone teams like Baylor, and then to get yourself set for the NCAA tournament when you never know what you're going to see one round to the next. I think Kansas has done a good job of scheduling this year teams that will present varying styles, but this is one of those up and down the floor run and gun type teams that will push pace. They'll do it with guys that, quite frankly, much like Kansas, can lead them on any given night from four or five different spots. And another similarity like Kansas, they've been doing it with only seven scholarship players of late for Bobby Hurley's team. So I think there's a lot of things that are very comparable about these two teams when you talk about elite level guard scoring, when you talk about the dynamic nature of the offense in which, you know, it could be Holder one night, it could be Evans the next, it could be White. I mean, they can beat you with a number of guys in a number of ways. But both these teams want to get out and push it. I think that's going to make for a really exciting afternoon of basketball. I know I can't wait to call it right here on Sports Radio 810 WASB.
That's right. Tips off at 1 o'clock. We're talking with Brian Haney, voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, here on Sports Saturday. We talk about a lack of depth. I understand Bill Self said today there's nothing new on Billy Preston's availability. So as of right now, he is not going to play Sunday. And I know that's got to be frustrating for the coach and for the fans as well, to just be in this state of limbo, which they've been in for almost four full weeks now.
It is, and obviously it's reared its ugly head being without him these last couple of games, where you've had Udoka Azubuike and Mitch Lightfoot both pick up two fouls with about 9 minutes to go in the first half versus both Washington and Syracuse, and got by without him versus Syracuse. Clay Young came in and played some good minutes, and Clay played well versus Washington too, but you know, when Washington was doing what they were doing with that zone that had two guys up top on the zone and then two guys kind of wide toward the wings, almost putting four full guys on the perimeter, there was so much space in the middle for Vic. But you get that two-on-one scenario where if you have a big guy on the back line, a true big, Vic can draw that last defender on the back line of the zone toward him and then throw up a lob. Well, you can do that if you got a 6'8", 6'9", 6'10 guy back there. When you got 6'5", 205, you can't exactly be throwing it up by the rim. And I think that really made Kansas one-dimensional and really put a lot of pressure on Vic, who at times was hitting, and then, as Fran Fraschilla described on the TV broadcast, at times had the yips. And yeah, he had 28 points, but it wasn't an efficient 28 when you take 23 shots to get there. And so I thought that was where the zone really tripped him up and was at its most effectiveness when Kansas got into foul trouble and really didn't have that big guy to lob it up to on the back line. And we're not used to seeing this at KU. Think back to that national title team. And, you know, a lot of folks want to make comparisons this team to that team because the Final Four is going to be in San Antonio this year, and you got great veteran guard play and all that. But the comparison stops when you get to the front court because you were bringing Cole Aldrich in off the bench. You had Darnell and Sasha and Will Arthur, and you had so many talented guys at big positions that in different matchups, different settings, could step up and deliver for you in the post. Kansas desperately needs that. Now, it could look a lot different in the next couple of weeks if you do get Billy Preston back. Silvio D'Souza still trying to get his situation clear to join the team at semester. They remain hopeful in that regard. But as of right now, when you're taking guys like James Sosinski off the football team to have more practice players that are big and more emergency guys that are big, it speaks to rare times of being that soon as opposed to Kansas.
That I had that on the list of things to ask you about, but to be honest, that was on the bottom. But since you brought it up, having James Sosinski practicing with the team, was that Sosinski's idea? Did he really have an interest in trying to play basketball, or is this something Bill Self and the coaching staff looked at and maybe looked at the high school histories of some of the guys on the football team and said, we need a body, get some guys out here, and let's see if somebody can play?
I was told that that he approached the basketball team, and then they vetted the situation and looked into it. So, wow, you know, he averaged 19 and I think it was 12 at the JC level a year ago back in Arizona. He originally signed with UMass as a quarterback to play football, then had a foot injury that caused him to redshirt, transfer back home to Arizona where he's from, and then he was unable to play football that fall as he was healing from the injury, but ended up playing basketball and was pretty good. So this is not some big stiff just to go in there and eat up fouls, but you're not going to see him in real game situations just yet either, unless it's an absolute emergency situation, which, you know, last Wednesday kind of called for that, and Coach Self still didn't turn to him just yet. So I think he's more capable than your typical rent-a-player, but at the same time, he's not going to be some kind of game-changing talent just yet. But to have a guy that does have some skills to him, in addition to a 6'7", 250 frame, that is a nice find on your team.
Did we lose Brian? Brian, did we lose you?
I'm still here.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, dropped out for just a second. All right, I'll leave you with this. Like I said, I know you got to run today. Brian Haney, voice of the Jayhawks. You can hear Arizona State and Kansas tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. One more piece of news since I started you off with a couple other news stories. Big upset in college basketball already today. Number one Duke goes down on the road to Boston College, 89-84. So the number one team in the country goes down.
Yeah, how about that? It's nice when KU has a stub your toe moment, which is inevitable to happen every season. It's nice when it happens the same week that two other teams in the top five also lose. Florida has dropped three in a row now, and then Duke's losing today. So be interesting to see what those polls look like coming up on Monday, because you know Kansas has played a good schedule, not quite as tough as some of the others, and they were looking dominant prior to the Wednesday result. And so I'll be interested to see what the Ballers have to say, and hopefully it's not too far of a fall. But I think you swept up in that. I only care about the number next year when it comes to March Madness. And when you've been a one seed seven times in the last 11 years, I'd say they've been doing pretty good with those numbers.
All right, Brian Haney, voice of the Jayhawks. Awesome job, as always. Like I said, I know you're busy. I appreciate the time. Appreciate you jumping out for a few minutes. Enjoy the call tomorrow. Number 16, Arizona State. Number 2, Kansas. 1 o'clock live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Brian, have fun.
Hey, thanks, Brad. You have a great weekend, buddy. Always a pleasure.
I appreciate it. That's Brian Haney, voice of the Kansas Jayhawks. Game tips at 1, the pregame coverage, 11:30 or noon. I'm looking at Joshua. I should have looked at the schedule before I came in, but it's a long pregame show when you mix in the network and those sorts of things. So
schedule behind me is from last week. So we live in the mystery, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. So early coverage and great interviews he'll have with the players and head coach Bill Self. And I thought Bill Self, he's maybe the best in college basketball at sending those messages, veiled threats to his players in his press conferences when he's not happy. LeGerald Vick may have walked off that floor after the Washington loss and thought, 28 points. I did my job. I was pretty good. And then Bill Self comes out after the game and says, 28 points, 22 shots, and he was not good at all. And what I'm hoping is, I know the coaches were out of town for 1 or 2 days for recruiting. In fact, somebody told me that Bill Self was in Kansas City last night, as was the Kansas State basketball coach, Bruce Weber. They were both at the same game, and I believe scouting the same player. So the assistants were kind of running the show for a day, maybe two, but I'm sure Bill Self had some choice words before he left to go recruiting to get his team, for lack of a better term, a kick in the pants. Because if you think you're going to walk out against Arizona State, a team that a lot of people around here don't watch a lot because they're Pac-12, West Coast, they're playing at 11 o'clock at night on ESPNU or the Pac-12 Network, it's a very talented basketball team. And as Brian Haney said, they're very athletically gifted. They're very fast with the ball. That's what Bill Self said, fast and clever. So they will have some ball tricks. They will probably be some of those players who have figured out how to get away with carrying the ball a little bit, which used to get called really close, and now it's not called as close as it used to be. And if you can take advantage of those things, you can break down a defense a little bit easier. And I would imagine, after only seeing a little bit of Arizona State and St. John's last night, I would imagine Kansas is not going to see the kind of zone sets they saw against Syracuse and Washington, and those were two different zones. But they're not going to see those zone sets. Arizona State is going to want to run pedal to the metal and try to hang with the Jayhawks. The way the Jayhawks can blunt that is start hitting threes early. And then that'll get that'll for sure lock them into more of a man-to-man and let them take the foot off the accelerator a little bit. Pre-game does start at noon. All right, Josh Briscoe got that. So noon for the pregame show here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. 1 o'clock tip-off for Arizona State and Kansas. Like I said, when you play back-to-back games against a zone team, it can be somewhat less than entertaining basketball, not only for the team that's playing against it, but the team that runs it. It's not all that fun to watch. I mean, anybody that's watched Jim Boeheim's Syracuse teams for the past, 40 years? It's not a fun brand of basketball to watch, but it's effective because not a lot of teams do it anymore. And if you're a guy like Coach Boeheim, who's taught it for all those years, he can break down just about any style of team. And when the threes are not falling for you, you can't figure out a way to break it down, and that's how you end up with a loss to Washington. Now, the upside to this, and it's been talked about before, is Arizona State played late Friday night in Tempe. They'll be coming to Lawrence today, and then they'll play early Sunday at 1 o'clock, and they'll be losing 2 hours. So their schedule is going to definitely be off a little bit. So they're going to be off. They will have traveled. They will have stayed in the hotel overnight. And I guarantee not many of the players on the Arizona State roster have played in a place like Allen Fieldhouse. And Bill Self will be counting on all of that. And as Brian also mentioned, if you saw the videos on Twitter last night, there was a flooding situation at Allen Fieldhouse on a couple of different floors. It did not affect the court itself, and it is cleaned up, so there will be no problem for the game at Allen Fieldhouse. All right, we got a lot of guests lined up for you today here on Sports Saturday. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Nick Garcia, former star defender for the Kansas City Wizards / Sporting KC. He was on that 2000 MLS Cup championship team when he was a rookie, and MLS Cup is holding its finals today between Seattle and Toronto FC at 3 o'clock, so Nick can give us a little perspective on that. We'll also talk about, if you're into the soccer thing, the presidential runoff for U.S. soccer right now has gotten very interesting. A plot twist this week, as Hope Solo has thrown her proverbial hat into the ring to be the president of U.S. soccer. This is a player who was kicked off the women's national team more than once, suspended more than once. Her and her husband both got in trouble with U.S. soccer. And now she wants to lead U.S. soccer. I've read her press release. She really doesn't do interviews unless she has full control over the setting and the atmosphere. We've tried to interview her several times over the years, and U.S. soccer has basically forbidden her from talking to the media unless it's something that they set up specifically. So she's talking about pay equity and making youth soccer more affordable because these overpriced club teams kind of keep kids out of the loop. I understand some of that. Hope Solo is not going to be president of U.S. soccer. So we'll talk about that with Nick Garcia in just a couple of minutes. Coming up at 3 o'clock, we'll talk with David Leske. You know him best from Twitter, at DB Leske. He writes for Baseball Prospectus, covers the Kansas City Royals. Talk about some of the offseason moves they've made so far. Nothing that jumps off the page. Willie Peralta, who's a so-so pitcher with the Brewers, went from the starting rotation to the bullpen to the minor leagues. Also signed Scott Barlow, who's never played an inning at the major league level after spending six seasons in the Dodgers organization. And then Dayton Moore was able to nab a couple of players that the Atlanta Braves were forced to release because of the scandal down there in which they were overspending and breaking major league rules on signing foreign players. So they got a couple of players from the Atlanta Braves, which kind of makes me wonder if that was part of the reason maybe Dayton didn't pursue the Atlanta Braves job further. Is because all the issues they're having? I don't know. We'll also talk about the winter meetings that are kicking off and what that means. Is this more table setting for future talks, or does something big in the works this week? You're looking at Eric Hosmer, who talked to the Padres this week, which I'm dumbfounded by that. Unless they come up with the biggest offer ever, it's a terrible organization. It's a terrible team. But it's in one of the greatest cities in America to live in. So if you want to go to San Diego, fine. I don't see it happening for Eric Hosmer. Plus, playing on the West Coast for a team that's bad, you're not getting any attention commercially and across the country. You're not going to be on SportsCenter until 2 o'clock in the morning. Mike Moustakas, haven't heard much on him yet. Neither on Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar, Jason Vargas. So David Leske will update us on all of that. And then Richard Baldinger, former Chiefs offensive lineman, will join us at 4 o'clock. We'll talk about the Chiefs' recent struggles, which is not recent struggles anymore. This is now a month and a half into it, and the season and the division hangs on the line this weekend against the Raiders. So we'll talk to him about that, and we'll also probably throw in some comments from my interview last night with former Chiefs running back Larry Johnson. Pretty interesting interview. I've known Larry since he came into the National Football League. Known some of the bad things that happened, some of the good things that happened. And during the interview, he was totally open and honest about the things he did wrong while he was with the Kansas City Chiefs. He was apologetic about it. He felt bad for Herman Edwards having to deal with all of his issues all the time. And he's turned his life around. He works with kids now. And he has some words of advice for Marcus Peters. And Sam Mellinger wrote a column on Marcus Peters and kind of the divisive nature of just the subject of Marcus Peters. And for me, I think there's a generational split on how people feel about Marcus Peters. I think younger people, I know I've heard Joshua Briscoe on his show on ESPN Kansas City, is kind of more on Marcus Peters' side, whereas, not excusing what he's done, but saying the piling on has gone too far. And then I've heard other people who can't seem to pile on enough. So Larry Johnson has some interesting comments about Marcus Peters, and Richard Baldinger will probably have some opinions about that as well. So I asked Joshua, are we coming up on a break here? Okay, we are coming up on a break, so we'll take a timeout. You're listening to Sports Saturday. Coming up next, Nick Garcia will join us. I am Brad Porter. We'll be back right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Back on Sports Saturday on a chilly Saturday afternoon in Kansas City, I am Brad Porter. And got a lot of good stuff coming up. We just talked with Brian Haney, voice of the Kansas Jayhawks. That was great. We'll talk with David Leske from Baseball Prospectus coming up in a little bit about the Royals and the offseason and the winter meetings. We'll also talk with former Chiefs offensive lineman Richard Baldinger about what's going on over at Arrowhead Stadium right now. But now I am happy to welcome to the show my good friend Nick Garcia, former defender for the Kansas City Wizards / Sporting KC. Played with the U.S. national team program for a long time as well. Nick, thank you for joining us. How you doing?
Thanks, Brett. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am fantastic. And Nick and I worked together in television for a number of years at the channel formerly known as Metro Sports. Had a good time with that. My kids play at Brookside Soccer that Nick runs, which is awesome. Wanted to talk a couple of things with you today. MLS Cup Finals 2017 is coming up here in about 20 minutes. Seattle against Toronto FC, a rematch. And also the U.S. national team program, which you know very well, and specifically the runoff for the next person to be president of U.S. soccer. And this has come up primarily because the U.S. men's team did not make the World Cup for the first time since 1990. And there's a lot of thoughts about how to rebuild the organization, how to develop the youth levels in the United States, what systems to use. There's a long list of candidates, but the name that popped out this week who jumped into the race was former women's national team goalkeeper Hope Solo. And I don't know what you thought when you heard that, but I was first of all, I'm not surprised because she has a massive ego, but sure. I'm dumbfounded that she could think that that's a possibility.
Yeah, I don't get it, you know, and I think what there's 8 or 9 candidates now to potentially fulfill Sunil Gulati's, you know, vacant chair that he's gonna, you know, soon give up. And you know what is a myth to me is, you know, I want to see complete change. You know, I think to completely rid FIFA, CONMEBOL, CONCACAF, U.S. Soccer, any higher sanctioning body. You know, you've got to kind of get rid of, you know, things in the past. And I think, you know, Sunil Gulati deciding not to run, I think, is a great thing. But I'd like to see some new, fresh blood in there, whether it's an ex-player, someone closely connected to the game, whether it be an agent or someone else. But, you know, I think there's probably too many candidates right now, and I think we're going to see that, you know, get whittled down here very soon.
Well, all the candidates certainly bring different aspects to the table. Kathy Carter is kind of a marketing expert, business side expert. Eric Winalda, former player, TV analyst, coach, and resident hothead.
Yes.
Kyle Martino, former player, TV guy. Paul Lapointe, who's, again, kind of a business guy, ran the United Premier Soccer League. Paul Caligari, former national team player, now a coach in the NASL. And, of course, Hope Solo. So let me ask you a couple of different sides of this. The former players, Winalda, Martino, Caligari, and just for the sake of argument, Hope Solo. To me, what I hear from what I feel from those people is, I know the right coaches to hire, and that's what I'm going to do because I'm upset about the senior level national team. What I hear from the business side people is, no, this is a top down to the little kids to get this moving in the right direction. I don't know how to feel about either side of it. You know, probably all of these people.
Yep.
What is the right approach to rebuild the American soccer system?
Well, first and foremost, it is a business. You know, I think whether you look at Germany, France, Holland, Spain, Mexico, or even, you know, some little, you know, island like the Faroe Islands, you know that soccer is a business. And whether, you know, it is us or Jurgen Klinsmann or some other famous former professional player in his or her given country, that's great. And, you know, that person has the experience on the field. But, again, it gets back to business. You know, how are things done in closed room sessions? What kind of negotiating skills do you have? What kind of a team can you form, really, right, off the field to get things done? And that's why, for me, as a former player, I would prefer personally to have someone with some business knowledge, an agent of sorts, you know, someone, you know, shoot, it could be a former player who has been an agent who has, you know, gone in to do things. Michel Platini kind of comes to mind, who has his own issues there within UEFA. So personally, I would prefer a non-former player because, as you know, us players sometimes have a very skewed vision
yes.
of things, and it does have to start from the top down.
So what this election, who exactly votes on this? Is there a U.S. soccer board? Who has a say in who's going to become the next president? Do the different leagues get a voice? Does Major League Soccer have a voice in this at all? Does the NWSL Women's League have a voice? Who has a voice in this?
So it's kind of a mix, you know. So you do have a player vote. You have some media. You have a board. At the end of the day, you know, U.S. soccer has grown and power. You know, if you look at Major League Soccer pre-1996, you know, U.S. soccer in Chicago was kind of a standalone. But now there is so much integration with U.S. soccer, Major League Soccer, NWSL, USL. What I have read or what I'm reading between the lines here with Don Garber and those at Major League Soccer is, you know, they want one of their insiders connected because they know with some Soccer United Marketing, Major League Soccer, and other entities that have the potential to lose a lot more, they need someone that they can trust, you know, kind of one of their old cronies. So, again, there is a fine line between getting someone new, getting someone who understands soccer and the business side, and someone who truly understands the players' wants and needs. So the vote really, from what I understand, is somewhat of a weighted vote at the end of the day. So may the best man or woman win.
We're talking with Nick Garcia, former defender for Sporting KC, the Kansas City Wizards, involved with a lot of aspects of soccer, including monitoring referees and games at Major League Soccer level. One more question on the presidential vote for U.S. soccer. I saw a story on HBO Real Sports maybe a week or two ago. There's a coach in China, an American coach, who's been in China for 20 years, 30 years, and his name, I forgot to write it down, and I'm completely drawing a blank on it. But they went over there to interview him, and he said the way we teach soccer starting at 3 years old has been wrong for so long that it needs to start there. And some of the former players have said this guy does have some good ideas, but if he's not on the list now, he's not coming. But he had some points.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's a lot of people, right, throughout the world, whether they are American or they're from a different descent, that have some great ideas. And, you know, there's also an American, I believe, in Japan who's been there for the past 30 or 40 years, and the Japanese Federation brought him in to kind of help, you know, start things anew. So other countries have had models by which they can get things done. But you also have to remember, we are so fragmented here in the U.S. You know, there's an expansive, you know, amount of mileage to cover. There has been no truly concerted effort from U.S. soccer to disseminate messaging, you know, from the way you play to format to, you know, field sizes, all these things. So it's been left to other entities, youth organizations to kind of do what's right for them. Germany, conversely, they have a methodology in how coaches should coach, the size of the fields, when you should have games, what you should do. So we here in the U.S. just have not had that. So whether it be someone from the outside looking in or an insider, there is a wealth of knowledge. But, you know, things have to change. I think that's, you know, been said by many a people. But when's it going to start? And I think it probably already has, right?
Right.
You know, Brad, I think if you look at things, you know, throughout the soccer scope, it will change even more. But, you know, we have this thing called college and university that no other soccer country has, you know, and that is a true factor, I think, in how we teach the game, how we integrate the game, and what kids are allowed to do and not to do.
And we're talking with Nick Garcia, former Kansas City Wizards Sporting KC defender. One final question on the national team, and then I'll move to the MLS Cup Championship, which is this afternoon in about 15 minutes. This is kind of a tongue-in-cheek question, and it's actually more of a joke. All right, so not going to the World Cup next year in Russia, the United States, Italy, world power, the Netherlands, world power, maybe we put together a special NIT, kind of like college basketball. The not-invited teams have their own little four-country tournament.
Don't be surprised, and I know you're saying that tongue-in-cheek, you know, and, you know, you take Holland, you take Italy. Those two countries by themselves have great youth academies and youth systems. Holland probably has one of the best in the world, and very few people understand and know that there is a Dutch contingency here in the United States that has helped U.S. soccer kind of comb through things here the past year or two and helping get some things down on the books for us. So even though you might have the best intentions and plans on paper or in your mind, it doesn't guarantee success. And, you know, again, I think for us as a country, you know, we are starting to reevaluate things for coaches, for players, you know, and we can't forget the parents, right? Because a lot of times it's the parents that hold the keys to the car that kind of drive these kids to the game, literally, or away from the game.
All right, we're talking with Nick Garcia. We'll transition to Major League Soccer. MLS Cup 2017 is in about 15 minutes. a rematch of last year's finals, Seattle at Toronto, one of your former teams. Is this a chance? Seattle was the winner last year in penalty kicks. That's a hard thing to deal with, but it worked for Sporting Kansas City as well a couple of years ago. Is this kind of the final step for Toronto FC to justify all the money that's been spent on Michael Bradley, Jozy Altidore, Sebastian Giovinco, and scoring more points than anybody else in Major League Soccer this year? Is this kind of their final chance to say, yes, we are a championship club? Or if they lose this one, do they step back a little bit?
You know, I don't think they stepped back. I think it was justified last year making it to the final. You know, that team, even when I was there, had struggled internally and externally to really kind of reach expectations. They have done it. Greg Vanney has put together some great guys. So I think they've met those expectations. The Toronto crowd is very tough. I kind of compare it to maybe a New York Yankee type of fan base. They demand success. They have now gotten it. So I think if they are to win MLS Cup, I think it's one of those things where it just proves that much more importantly how you have to have significant DPs that are making impacts. You know, you could say the same thing for Atlanta. You could say the same thing for other teams, probably not the LA Galaxy here this year. But, you know, I think if Toronto gets it done, that place will go crazy. And, you know, I had Toronto winning it this year. I had Atlanta in the final. We know how Atlanta and Columbus ended up there for that first game. But, again, Toronto has a little bit of difficulties right now, right? You know, you got Jozy Altidore, who's not 100%. Michael Bradley has to have a lights-out game. Roman Torres for Seattle didn't play in the last game. Clint Dempsey is coming on strong. It wasn't around last year. So a lot of differences can be made between these two games. But the similarity is that, you know, it's back in Toronto. It's going to be cold as you know what. And those fans, I think, are going to play a bigger role here tonight in this game than they have last year. So if I had to choose a team, again, I'm going to have to go for the folks up there at Toronto FC. I just think they're going to have maybe a little too much, not much, maybe a percent much more than what Seattle's going to bring to the table. And I think, again, nothing to take away from Seattle, but they were lights out last final.
I did hear one area of complaint about this particular matchup is that it's a repeat of last year, and Major League Soccer is supposed to be a league of parity. It doesn't bother me that much that it's the same two teams again. They both earned it. Do you think that takes away from the we're a league of parity versus, okay, we're now the high-dollar league, or the high-dollar teams are going to control more of it?
I don't see it being, you know, something about parity. The best teams are there. You know, I think in past years, especially when I played or in other subsequent years, you know, maybe not the best teams were there. It just happened to be that Toronto and Seattle have done well to get there. They've been healthy. They've gotten points. Obviously, you know, Toronto FC, I think, is an easy one, right, because they had 69 points on the year and they got the supporter shield. So at the end of the day, you have the two best teams. They're there to get things done. You know, and don't forget that, you know, Seattle's coach was put in the mix, you know, halfway through the 2016 season. He's now been around for a full year and a half. So, again, it doesn't bother me. I think what probably bothers me more is the fact that you have these teams that kind of underperform, that don't get to the playoffs, that probably should. And at the end of the day, yes, you've got to spend money to make money. It's that old adage, but the best teams are there.
And 2 points, and I won't. I'm kind of running out of time here. The only team I'm happy that's not in there is New York City FC, because I think the folks who control them from Manchester City came in thinking they knew better than everybody else what to do, and then they played them in a baseball stadium at Yankee Stadium, and they still can't get a stadium deal done. And the other thing I'm going to run out of time for is the Columbus Crew disaster right now, where the owner, I guess, had this secret clause in his contract when he bought the team, 2 years ago, that he could move the team to Austin, Texas, and nobody knew about this. Somebody knew about it, but the fans didn't know about it, and now they're being dangled along. I'll give you 30 seconds to kind of comment on that. Major League Soccer looks awful in this deal.
They do, and you know, and it starts with Don Garber. You know, he's the one that controls the purse strings for the owners. You know, you talk about dynasties, you talk about issues, you talk about success, and it has to start with New York. and specifically Don Garber, not teams in New York. So shame on him. I think it's been handled very poorly. And at the end of the day, I think the fans are the ones that suffer, and people just have a bad taste in their mouth about Major League Soccer in general.
Well, hopefully the attorney general or the legislator there that went to look through the legal language punishes Columbus, because it's a taxpayer-funded stadium, and they're gonna pay a huge penalty to get out. Hey, Nick Garcia, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, Brad, appreciate it.
Good luck with the spring season for Brookside Soccer, and hopefully we'll see you around Swope Park sometime.
All right, thanks.
All right, Nick Garcia, former defender for the Kansas City Wizards and Sporting KC. And if you go to the Sporting KC Twitter account, they posted a picture on there today of the 2000 MLS Cup Championship team, and you can see Nick Garcia from way back when, and he actually had short hair back then, and that was a way long time ago, if you know Nick. All right, my name is Brad Porter. Josh Briscoe is running the board. You're listening to Sports Saturday. We'll be back right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Back on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Brad Porter, taking you around the sports world this afternoon. Got some great guests still coming up in the next hour. At the top of the hour, David Leske from Baseball Prospectus is going to join us, talk Royals baseball. The winter meetings are underway down there. Are getting ready to get underway down in Orlando. They like to go someplace warm, and that's great. So will this be table setter talk to kind of set things up for further baseball moves? Will trades be discussed? Will big name free agents be signed? We'll have to find out about that. So David Leske at 3 o'clock. That's in about 3 or 4 minutes. Richard Baldinger, former Chiefs offensive lineman, going to join us later in the show. Boy, it's hard to figure out, and I heard this discussion a lot this week. Are the Chiefs more like the team that started 5-0 or more like the team that's lost 6 of the last 7? Are they somewhere in between? Have they lost the edge? Have they been figured out? Do they not have the depth you need to have to make it through a successful season in the National Football League? A lot of issues, a lot of problems, and perhaps we're seeing now why John Dorsey was let go. When you look at the lack of depth on the roster, when you look at the draft picks from this past season and how little impact they've had on the team, when you look at the draft picks that were given up for next year, it's going to be a thin draft for the Chiefs next year. They don't have a lot of spots. So perhaps that's why John Dorsey is on his way to Cleveland. I hope he enjoys his time there. One of the worst owners in professional sports. And he just keeps churning through people. And one of the things, Jimmy Haslam, right? So one of the things he said in the John Dorsey press conference, he said, the most important thing is to get the quarterback right. And I just had to laugh because they've been so bad at doing it. He can't be serious about making that demand when he's been in charge of an organization that has failed so many times at doing it. John Dorsey's going to make a huge check. He's going to make a lot of money. He's going to be there at least 2 years, maybe 3 or 4. I don't think he even has to get it right to make that pile of cash and ride off into the sunset. It was funny to hear the owner of the Browns say we have to get the quarterback right. So we'll talk about that with Richard Baldinger. We'll also see if we can sneak in a clip of the interview we did last night with former Chiefs running back Larry Johnson. Very thoughtful stuff on his career, the mistakes he made, and some advice for Marcus Peters and what he should do now to get that going. So we will do all of that. Coming up over the next couple hours here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll take a quick timeout. I am Brad Porter. Joshua Briscoe is running the board. Back with more right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.